So this morning, I will talk about the robe of transmission, which is a topic very close to me right now, and very close to a lot of us, actually, here at Zen Center. This is a big topic in Zen, Buddhist tradition, and I'm just going to kind of skate a little bit across the surface of it today. But right now, our Sangha has, I think, about 15 people who are sewing or have sewed on their initiation raksus, robe. We have one person who's just finished his black ordination robes and is going to be transmitted very soon. And we've got three people who finished sewing brown robes and were recently transmitted by our guiding teacher, Tim Burkett. So lots of sewing going on here at Zen Center. Lots of robes. Lots of work for our generous and patient sewing teacher, Rosemary Taylor. So we'll start with a story from the koan collection, The Gateless Gate, from China. This is case number 23. Sometimes titled, Think Neither Good Nor Evil. When he became emancipated, the sixth ancestor received from the fifth ancestor the bowl and robe given from the Buddha to his successors generation after generation. Out of envy, a monk named Myo pursued the ancestor to take this great treasure away from him. The sixth ancestor placed the bowl and robe on a stone in the road and told Myo, these objects symbolize the faith. There is no use fighting over them. If you want them, take them. Myo tried to lift the robe, but it was as immovable as a mountain. He became terrified, and trembling with awe, he said, I came for the Dharma, not the robe. I beg you to please reveal it to me. The ancestor said, think neither good nor evil. And at that very moment, what is the original face of monk Myo? In that instant, Myo suddenly attained a deep realization and his whole body shaked and was covered with sweat. In tears, he bowed and said, besides the secret words and secret meaning you have just now revealed to me, is there anything else? The ancestor said, what I've told you is no secret at all. If you reflect on your own true face, the secret will be found in yourself. So there's our koan. There's our koan this morning, right? And a little bit of backstory here is that Myo, at the monastery where he would have practiced with his teacher, was the senior monk. He was the one who knew how everything went at the monastery. When it was time for his teacher, the old abbot, to step down, most everybody, including himself, would have expected it would have gone to him. He had dedicated his perhaps whole life, but at least many, many years to studying Zen. And he was a man of letters. He spoke eloquently. He wrote eloquently. Everybody knew him. He'd be a good teacher. He'd be a good abbot. And instead, the sixth ancestor, our main character here, was given the transmission instead. And he was a young guy. He was an illiterate guy. By some accounts, he was a woodcutter. And he's the one who ends up with the robe and the bowl. So one message we can take away from this story is that the great sacred transmission of the Buddhas and ancestors went to an illiterate woodcutter, not to the best and the brightest. That's kind of nice, isn't it? Unless you're the best and the brightest, I guess. But the Buddha Dharma, which is inseparable in this story from the robe itself, is not a reward for anything. It is not a reward. It can't be attained. It can't be earned. It can't be deserved. So the robe in this story, like the bowl, are symbols. And symbols are designed to be like windows. We learn, and we can learn to see through them to the vast space that's beyond them. The vast truth that's beyond them. Because without the window, we see only the wall. We see only our limitation. We think that's the edge. That's as far as it goes. Right? So when symbols are working really properly, we're invited to see something else. Much, much, much bigger. Right? Truth. We can see beyond. We see through. So in Zen, symbols are not minimized as references to something else. Symbols do not refer to the symbolized. In Zen, symbols are expressions of the symbolized. There's a difference there, right? It's subtle, but there's a difference there. And like a lot of stuff in Zen, this is about no separation. The robe doesn't refer to anything beyond itself. Right? The symbol doesn't refer to something beyond itself. It is an expression of that thing. There is no separation. So in the story, the robe and the Dharma are one thing. Which is why... Is that better? Okay. I'm not sure why that happens. The robe and the Dharma in the story are one thing. Which is why, even though he claims he's coming for the Dharma, not the robe, he can't lift the robe. Right? They're one thing. They're one thing. Expressions of the symbolized. So in Soto Zen tradition, we're very clear about something, which is that, absolutely speaking, the great Dharma transmission of the Buddhas and the ancestors is nothing other than reality itself. Reality is itself, undivided, just as it is, right now. That's it. That's the transmission. That's the greatest possible transmission. Right? It includes everything. Right? From the absolute perspective, that's the great transmission. Relatively speaking, the great Dharma transmission of the Buddhas and ancestors is Zazen. Zazen. And specifically, it's your Zazen. It's your Zazen. The great transmission, the great lineage, the great handing down from warm hand to warm hand in this tradition is Zazen, the true Dharma eye. And it's yours, and so the robe of the Buddhas is exactly yours. It is exactly your Zazen. This is why no one else can move it. Your Zazen is an immovable mountain. That's why no one else can take it. It's also why you can't give it away. You can't give your Zazen to anyone. You can't. It's also inseparable from you. It doesn't happen without you. Right? It's you. It's you. So the person who collected all the poems and the stories and the koans for the collection The Gateless Gate was named Mumon. And when he was collecting all these koans and verses and things, he usually added a commentary. He always added a commentary to each one of them, and sometimes a poem as well. And part of his commentary for this case number 23 is the sentence, "The sixth ancestor should say that this is a state of emergency needing grandmotherly kindness." The sixth ancestor should say that this is a state of emergency needing grandmotherly kindness. That's an interesting insight. emergency cases require grandmotherly kindness. That's interesting, isn't it? Emergency cases require grandmotherly kindness. Our founder here at Zen Center Katagiri, Katagiri Roshi, said, "Life is an emergency case." Doesn't your life feel like an emergency case? Yes, it does. I know mine does. An emergency case. And what happens when things are emergency cases? We don't usually respond with kindness. We usually tense up. And we freak out. And our hearts go fast, and our heads go fast, and our bodies go fast. And we focus. More, more, more. Quicker, quicker, quicker. It's an emergency case. Our vision goes from being very, very broad to something very narrow, right? We get very laser beamy when there's an emergency, everything but this, which is important, right? In an honest to God emergency, that's part of the brilliance of the human animal. The adrenaline and the focus and the energy. You can see clearer and run faster. Life is an emergency case. And Dogen, our great founder in Japan, of Soto Zen, says, "Life and death is a great matter that passes away quickly. Do not waste it." He's saying the same thing. It's an emergency case. And yet Mumon is reminding us, emergency cases require grandmotherly kindness. So this is why, you know, when we think about our lives as emergency cases, and if you don't currently imagine your life as being an emergency case, just wait a little while. It'll come. I promise it always does. If you're not currently in a crisis, just, you know, count to 10 or something. And the fact that we know on some level our lives are short, and they're not long for this world, we are not long for this world. We have very limited time. We're usually acutely aware, albeit subconsciously, of our own impermanence. And when we're more consciously aware, or more acutely aware of this, it's easy to bring with it a feeling of constriction, even anxiety or even panic. It's an emergency case. And that's part of why we practice with fervor, with devotion, with dedication. Like our hair is on fire. In Zen traditions, practice like your hair is on fire. Because this is an emergency. It's an emergency. But it's also why we practice with gentle care and great kindness and patience. Because this is an emergency. Right? And emergency cases require grandmotherly kindness. I'm a great believer in the phrase grandmotherly kindness. I like it a lot because I had that kind of grandma. If you didn't have that kind of grandma, replace it with grandfatherly kindness or Labrador Retriever kindness or whoever that person is for you. Plug in something that works. So to get back to the robe. The robe of the Buddha, the transmission, as they say in the tradition, of the eye of the true Dharma, is whatever you are wearing right now. It is whatever you are wearing right now, as you hear me say this. There is no other robe. The clothes you are wearing right now, as you hear this, include everything. So literally, there can be no other robe. Right? What you're wearing includes everything. There is no other robe. How could there be? So the robe of the Buddha's transmission is also the blanket you were wrapped in when you were first born. The very first thing that ever touched your skin is the robe of the Buddhas and the ancestors. The very first thing that ever covered you, the very first thing you ever wore or touched, the very first thing that ever provided you with warmth or refuge. Right? At that moment, the transmission is perfect and complete. Right? So the robe of transmission is a garment that includes the whole universe in an instant, and it is therefore unique and valuable beyond any possible measure, and it's also nothing special at all. Right? What you have on today, you just threw on, because you're on your way to Zen Center, and that was on the top of the pile. Right? We don't live in anything other than the undivided totality of every single thing that's ever been, will be, or is. And it's nothing special. Isn't that how we normally experience it? That's no big deal. You got up, got out of bed, you brushed your teeth, had a cup of coffee, had some breakfast, went to Zen Center. It's just Sunday. You're just sitting in a chair. That's it. It's no problem. There's no problem. Isn't that interesting? It's both those things at the same time. Seriously, nothing special at all. This is the most average day in the world. And yet, are we ever separated from it? Wow. The most ordinary, normal, boring thing in the world is the most fantastic, unimaginable, unique miracle. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So nothing special. We say that a lot in Zen, nothing special. We are in training to be nothing special. That's really important. That's really important. I know our culture has a relationship with that word. We don't like being told we're nothing special. We like the opposite of that quite a lot. Oh, you're very special. You're very special. Which, of course, you are. Right? There's only one of you. You're a miracle beyond all imagining. But there's also 7 billion other miracles beyond imagining. Unless we start including the trees and the bugs and the blades of grass, and then you can't possibly count that high. So, yep, welcome to our collective fate. Special beyond all beyond all reason or consciousness, and yet no big deal. Just one more person. Now, there's a beautiful humility and wonder, I think, that can coexist in that. So nothing special. And part of why it's nothing special is because it's given to us like that first baby blanket. You know, everybody's had that experience. Not many of us remember it, of course, but this is what humans do. The baby comes, you wrap it in something. The baby comes out, you wrap it in something. There's nothing special about that. It's what happens to most of us, most humans. And yet it's given to us this robe, this complete transmission, this body of the Buddha, which is how the robe is sometimes described, the body of the Buddha. This is happening, it has happened, generation after generation, without any hindrance. You were given that blanket without any strings attached. There weren't expectations that came with it. It wasn't given to you because you earned it. Right? You just needed it. So it was given. And it's good that we're given the transmission, the robe, this life, before we need to deserve it or earn it. So we have a taste of what is unconditioned. Does that make sense? Unconditioned? You know, when we talk about unconditional love, it isn't like, oh, I earned it, now I get it. I deserve it, now I get it. I've really been good. I'm so good. Ah, finally. Ta-da! Like getting an A on a test. You earn an A on a test. It was just given to you, wouldn't have any meaning. But love is something else. You know, the Dharma is something else. The transmission is something else. The robe is something else. What your life actually is something else. You got it completely because you exist. That's it. No conditions. Other than the ones we create. Other than the ones we make up and attach. All the extra. So the other symbol that's mentioned in our story is the bowl. And that is the story. The story is that the begging bowl, the alms bowl of the Buddha and his robe after he died were handed on to his successor, who is handing on to his successor, who is handing on to his successor. Almost certainly this is a myth. Doesn't matter. It's spiritually true. We understand what it means to us. Whether it historically happened or not, couldn't matter less. Doesn't matter. But those were the objects that represented the teaching, the Dharma. And the bowl of the Buddha is your mudra. When we sit in zazen, we form this shape very carefully, don't we? We overlap the left hand on top of the right, and we leave our palms up, down in our lap, as we receive whatever is offered. We rest them on our feet or on our thighs. They're right up against our abdomen. And we touch the tips of the thumbs, the very tips, together very carefully, right, to make this sort of beautiful oval, this receptive sort of bowl shape. And we make it really carefully, don't we? That's the way we're taught. We make the shape very, very carefully. The shape is a barometer of your mind, you know. When your mind starts to wander and you kind of start thinking about later on today or maybe pastries, the thumb tips separate, or the oval collapses into sort of a lima bean sort of deal. It's sort of pathetic. So sneak a look when you're in the Zendo. Next, right? Your eyes are open anyway. You might as well just glance up a little bit. Check out. You kind of, you know, you this is our mind, right? You know, there's no separation between body and mind in Zen. So they're saying we give you this very specific posture to take with your body, because they're giving you a very specific posture to take with your heart and your mind. That's the point. That's what you're doing. When you're adjusting this, are you adjusting just your hands? It's like, of course not. I'm realizing my attentiveness isn't including something, so I come back and I include it by adjusting my hands, right? I notice that I'm slumping. Some part of me is saying no and wants to go back to sleep. When I adjust my posture to go back upright again, it's just a way of saying yes. It's like, oh no, I'll include sleepiness. I see you, sleepiness. Hello. I'm here. You're working with your mind, right? So this is your mind you're doing. So this is our bowl. This is the alms bowl. People have been sitting like this for thousands of years. The transmission, somebody teaching, somebody to teach, somebody to teach, somebody to teach, somebody to teach, to teach you. Oh, you can hold your hands like this, because this is a bowl. This is an alms bowl, and this has been carefully transmitted, this shape, from generation to generation, by all these humans who sat just like you, with heartbreak and with busy mind and with angst and with peace and with joy and with hope and with despair. And they sat just like you, and it's open, right, and empty, and it gratefully accepts anything that's put in it, just like an alms bowl in the tradition. You eat what they put in your bowl. That's it. You just eat what's put in your bowl. So when you're sitting zazen, and you're carefully making this mudra, think about that. What is that mudra holding right now? You know, does it accept everything? Does it reject anything? It's again just a way of blurring the line between body and mind. It's just a way of looking at zazen. What do we say no to? You know. So we form this bowl, we form this mudra very carefully, and we hold it with great care, and we just offer it. Moment after moment, we're just offering this open space. Right? And so at once we accept the totality of whatever is offered us. And we also just give our whole selves away. We just give our whole selves away, right? As an offering. An offering. Isn't that what zazen is? When self shows up, you just go, later, sweetie. Not now. Ideas, thoughts, cool, later. Give yourself away. Come back to us. Right? Fascinating. Receiving and giving. The emptiness of the three wheels. So the Dharma makes no distinctions. The Dharma makes no distinctions. The transmission of the eye of reality makes no distinctions. It is not just about wise and lofty and rare and precious or smart and accomplished. There is nothing secret about reality. Here it is. Not hiding again. Right? Nothing secret about it. Nothing exclusive about it. Did you earn this reality because you were super, super smart? Good at your job? Nope. Here it is. Here it is. No distinctions. Just as it is. Moment after moment offering itself completely in its wholeness to you, just like right now. Right? This is you. How your life offers itself moment after moment to all beings everywhere. Here you are offering yourself up, whether you're aware of it or not. Is there any way you can not offer yourself right now? No, your hearts are too big. You're too generous. Can you not be part of this unfolding? Is there a way you could hold yourself back? No. Even when we're trying to. Which we do. I mean, I totally get that. We do that all the time. but we can't not. Reality shows up as us. And I know that this stuff is simple in one way, but I also know it's extremely difficult for us to grasp. That's why the Zen path is so long, why any spiritual path is so long, why we have to be so patient, why we need that grandmotherly kindness, because it's just hard for us to grasp. We have to kind of live into knowing it. You know, it's not something we fit into our head. It's something we kind of live into knowing and being. And it's hard for us, I think, because we so believe that we are the bump on the universe. We just do. We just so believe that we are separate and that there's reality and then there's us. Right? There's everything and then there's me. Right? Reality and I'm the bump. I'm the extra. I'm the thing. We so believe in that fundamental separation. And we need it at some level. We need it. As Tim says, it's a useful fiction, a necessary fiction. The idea of separate self, a necessary fiction. It's true and it's not true at the same time, kind of. But what's also interesting about it is that we draw this conclusion of fundamental separateness very, 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 very early in our lives. Very early. And for the most part, it becomes part of our operating system, most of us. And when I say most, I mean like 99.9% of the population, 99.9% of the time, right? And yet it's an unexamined belief. We believe in it firmly, but we don't actually examine it very much. And Buddhism is all about, as I'm sure you guys know, examining that which is unexamined. You know, you don't just take somebody's word for it. You actually go into it like, boy, that guy's a jerk. I really believe that. I wonder why. Why don't I examine that? Get closer to it. Don't just let that be your operating system. Go into it. What's actually going on there? Oh, the Buddha said we're not separate. Don't just believe it because he's some dude. I mean, he's a famous dude, I know, but big deal. So what? Look at it. Is that true? Is it true? Maybe he's wrong. Look at it. Look at it. Look at it. Look at it. So this separate idea we all have, separate. We all belong to this. Cult of separate. I would encourage you to look at it. Examine it. This gap between you and the rest of creation. Find it. See if you can find it. Look really, really carefully. Let your mind get very still. Let your heart get very, very open and see if it shows up. See if you can actually find this gap that you believe in. Right? See if you can find it. Is there really a gap between you and the rest of reality? Is there really a gap between you and all beings everywhere? It'd be interesting to know that, wouldn't it? In a couple weeks, we're having a retreat here at Zen Center from May 1st through 5th. Does that sound plausible? Mm-hmm. Yeah. May 1st through 5th. A 5-day retreat with Tim, our guiding teacher here, and his talks are going to be about the paramitas. Those of you who are in practice period know the paramitas are the perfections. That's one translation of that word. And he's going to be giving talks on the six paramitas. We've been working with them either actively or passively for the past about 7 weeks in practice period. And the paramitas, as I said, that word is sometimes translated as perfection. They're also sometimes translated as words to the effect of, this is the thing that carries you to the other shore. This is the thing that takes you to the other shore. Right? The shore between the shore of suffering and the shore of freedom, nirvana. This is the thing that helps carry you across, something that carries you across. Spending time with that idea in that retreat would be a perfect time, a perfect setting in which to see if you can find this gap. To see if you can find this gap in your life. You know, join us for this retreat and see if you can spend some time with that teaching. See if you can actually find that the shore you so believe in as other is actually other. That'd be a good time to do it, wouldn't it? That's really all we do in meditation retreats is, you know, a lot of meditation. Duh. You can just sit and look for it, like, in the immediate experience of being alive, can I find the separation between me and all things? But I so believe in it. I base my whole life around it. I wonder if I can find it. So Suzuki Roshi, one of my teacher's teachers, yeah, says, and this is the quote that's on your program, because the whole koan wouldn't fit you guys. I want to put the koan on there, but the type would have had to have been so small that forget it. So this is what I gave you instead. My lecture for tonight will be very short, especially after having a good dinner of noodles, which were very long. Our transmission should be a very long, long one. And our transmission is a very special noodle. Dogen, Zenji says, when you realize Buddha nature, you are the teacher. You are the teacher of your master, too, and you will even be the teacher of Shakyamuni Buddha. That's fabulous. So, again, we come back to the same theme. When you realize what you really are, the gap between you and your teacher and your teacher's teacher and your teacher's teacher's teacher going all the way back to Buddha just disappears. It was never there in the first place. It was never there in the first place. That idea served its function and doesn't serve you anymore. So the distinction disappears. And you become even the teacher of the Buddha. So, to wrap up, I'm going to read the closing verse, the closing poem that Mumon wrote about your true identity. That's kind of cool. It sounds like we're all superheroes. And we have like an alter ego, but he's in on it. I know you're Batman. Okay. Mumon's verse. You cannot describe it. You cannot picture it. You cannot admire it. You cannot sense it. It is your true self. It has nowhere to hide. When the universe is annihilated, this remains indestructible. I'll read it again. You cannot describe it. You cannot picture it. You cannot admire it. You cannot sense it. It is your true self. It has nowhere to hide. When the universe is annihilated, this remains indestructible. So in our koan, when the sixth ancestor, Huineng, by the way, if you're a Zen person and you want to know the name, this is Huineng, is our very celebrated sixth ancestor, is confronted by Mio, the poor monk who's gripped with suffering. I beg you, please reveal to me the Dharma. Our hero says, think neither good nor evil. At that very moment, what is the original face of Monk Mio? In other words, what's your original face? Some of you have been hanging out here a while, have heard this before. What was your face before your grandparents were born? A common one? Like, what are you really? Really, really, really. What's the you before you? Like, the fundamental. Before you tell me your gender or your race or your pasta preferences or whatever little detail is it happens to be. No. I want to know the fundamental thing. So fundamental before you. So fundamental before your parents. So fundamental. You get the spirit here, right? The fundamental nature of you and the fundamental nature of reality itself can't possibly be two. So they really want you to investigate that with your mind, with your heart, with your body. They want you to go all the way into this question. It's the only way you're going to find it. You know, we'll usually skate along the surface and stay with ideas. Oh, in some way I existed way before my grandparents because all the objects of the universe have always been around, and so all those atoms just haven't coalesced yet, blah, 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 blah. Cool, good answer. Not a good answer. Nope, too intellectual. What actually happened? I want this to change the way you are in the world. And if you have an intellectual idea about how the atoms are just out there and they just haven't coalesced into you yet, cool. Is that going to change the way you live? Probably not. Maybe. Might help. It's a useful tool. Right? Stick with it, but use that as the first breadcrumb. Then follow that. Find it in your heart. Find it in your body. The original face. He's asking this guy an incredibly important question. All he's really asking him is, you're here for the Dharma, who are you? Who are you? If you find that, you'll know. And then this thing called Dharma disappears because what's that? The thing called you disappears because what's that? No separation. It's why you can't lift the robe. Because you think it's about a robe. Or you think somehow the robe is limited. Or do you know? This is how we spend so much of our time. Collectively, all of us, we do this. trying to lift these things in our lives that won't budge. Trying to move these things because we think they belong to us or should belong to us or belong in a different place. And what he's encouraging us to do is to use that symbol to see through it. Please see through it. It's a window. Don't get caught on your reflection in the glass. See beyond it to that huge field out there, right? I mean, here, I look at this window, and if I'm not caught on me, my own reflection, I look out onto Lake Calhoun, that huge space. Cool, right? Wow, waves, wind, ducks, cuddling in the swells, right out there. If I just remember, this is something for me to look past. It includes everything. Original face. And his words are, his closing verse is very provocative. You can't describe it, right? Words aren't going to work. You can't picture it. Don't turn it into a symbol. Right? That's what our consciousness does with most, if we turn it into a symbol of. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Like, when I say the word hungry, that's a symbol for the experience that you all know, that we more or less agree shows up in our actual field of experience as hunger. So it's useful. I say hungry, you go, oh, right, I know what you mean. Because you're referring to the experience of hunger. Right? So he's saying when you're trying to describe your original self, words aren't going to work. Pictures aren't going to work. They might help. They might tweak. They might get you, you know. But obviously, we're looking at something way, 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 way bigger than that. Tim's word he would have used a couple weeks ago when he was giving his talk was pre-reflective awareness. Remember that? Pre-reflective awareness. You cannot admire it. You cannot sense it. Why? It's not separate. It's not separate. You know, if I sense something, it's because it's not me. Right? That's how we make that fundamental split. Oh, I get it. Oh, I feel that. Oh, I don't feel that. That must be not me. Right? So there's me and not me. Oh, I get it. There's me and not me. That's what we're wanting to go back before that idea. That's what you're wanting to get back to. So senses aren't going to work. You can't admire it, describe it, or picture it because it's not separate. It is your true self. He actually gives us the answer. I love when sometimes they give you the answer. The right answer to the question is, it's your true self. Ta-da! Just say that answer. You pass the test. It is your true self. It has nowhere to hide. We hear this a lot, too. It's never, ever hidden. What's the nature of reality? It's never hidden. What's Buddha? It's never hidden. How could it be? Right? It's just this. It's just this. And then finally, when the universe is annihilated, this remains indestructible. So I normally think in terms of time, because I know we're all programmed to think very linearly. Is that a word? Linearly? Anyway, in a line. Think in a line. So that, oh, when the universe is annihilated, it's like someday, a million, million, million years from now, and everything's collapsed in upon itself, and the Big Bang reverses or whatever actually is going to happen, who knows? Oh, my true self will still be there. That's cool. That's one way of looking at it. Great. Good answer. Correct answer. Incomplete answer, though. When the universe is annihilated. When is the universe annihilated? When it stops being other. When it stops being other. Right? We need an idea of universe. We need something separate called universe for there to be one. Nothing separate. That's when the universe is annihilated. This remains indestructible. So his word indestructible here just means no gap. That's all it means. No gap. It can't be destroyed because it wasn't born. No gap. Indestructible just means that in all the great creation, there is only your robe. There is only your true self. There isn't anything else. So that's the invitation, I think. That's not the answer. I know what I'm telling you isn't necessarily helpful. Thank goodness. Thank goodness the job of sitting in this cushion isn't to be helpful. But what I do hope is that it helps you see part of why we do what we do here. That all of our fancy ideas, that all of our fancy robes and symbols and that kind of stuff are always just to help free us from obstruction, to help us look past our limitations, just like windows. They're just to help us remember that there's something more than just the wall. There's something infinitely large beyond it. And I think it's helpful to see Zazen that way. And I hope that that's how... I hope that's at least part of how you experience Zazen. Like, there's this thing that I do that's nothing special at all. It's sitting. We do it all day, every day. We're sitting, right? It's the least remarkable thing a human can possibly do. Right? That's our practice. And at the same time, wow, there is a miracle that happens every single time I get in that cushion to just address the separation that I still believe in, to try to look past something, to try to see through the window. Right? Zazen is a symbolic action. It is a symbol. Just look past it. Right? That's the transmission. And it's given to every single person without any exception. So then we start hopefully experiencing the universe as something that's us, and that when we imagine there's a separation, then at least imagine that separate thing being something that shows up every single day and every single atom to support you, to hold you. Not because you deserve it or because you're good enough, because it can't do anything other than completely offer itself to you, the way you offer yourself to it. And you do that dance until there's no separation, there's only one thing. And that's my hope. That's my hope. So, thank you. Thank you very much.